extra time.
Hello and welcome to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, your host, and today I am joined by George Wright. Hello, George.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm not bad, man. You're joining me today because obviously
there's only one club to talk about.
There is only one club to talk about. The team who I assume are title favourites at this point. Yeah. It's Arsenal Football Club. But before we get into our breakdown of what exactly is going on with Arsenal, I just wanted to say that we have been reading your comments and we've seen that some of you have had trouble with the discount code for Manscaped over the last few weeks. So we got in touch with Manscaped and they've told us that now if you want to get that free shipping and 20% discount, that you should use the code EXTRATIME, all one word, block capitals, and that should put it right, because we have seen that some people have been trying to get it and haven't been able to. So let's move on to the show proper. I don't know if I'm excited about this because I like talking about Arsenal, but unexcited because I'm not that optimistic about us. I mean, I guess we should start with the summer. How did you feel about how the summer went? What did you think were the areas we needed to address, and how do you think we did at addressing them?
Obviously, we needed a centre half, even though we've got about 10 on the books. We needed one because our options are pretty average, to be honest. We addressed that in a good way. I think Gabriel has been fantastic since signing. We need a left-footed centre-back who can play football, and he's fit the bill. He's also great in the air. He's a big presence at the back. His passing is sometimes a bit astray, but you can see he's always attempting a risky pass, which is pretty good. As like someone other than David Luiz trying that is always pretty good. And we only paid $5 million up front, I think, for him. So as opposed to Lyon, Lyon were great to work with as a French club because they just give you whatever you want for a good price. Midfield needed a big overhaul, last time we talked about Arsenal, I would love us to sign Partey because it'd be a statement transfer, and we did that. And I know you've got concerns over his age, but I think he's exactly what we needed in that area to help us transform us from this three at the back boring mess to, you know, trying to dominate games and impose ourselves. And obviously that would have been helped with a number 10 or a creative, or like the, you know, the new role of a hybrid 8-10. But we weren't able to do that, unfortunately. But the thing is, with a COVID hit summer, not many transfers out from us, hard to shift players who are quite deadwood. I think we'd done all right. I think it was a good window in considering the circumstances.
Okay. Well, I think this is the first place we're going to disagree, because I thought it was a really bad window. Partey, I'm fine with. I think we kind of overpaid given the market at the moment. Like, not for the quality of player, I guess. I don't like his age, but I do think he's a good player. And I do think if he helps us move to a back four, that is going to improve us a lot.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing we need to do. And in a weird way, I think we'll probably come on to our youth players, but I think the Europa League is probably the way we start doing that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would imagine Partey gets some minutes on Thursday against Rapid Vienna anyway. Yeah. And then we'll start to see, right, are we going to stick with this three at the back that clearly isn't working, and we're relying on Aubameyang to pull something out of the hat? But yeah, as I said, I think he's integral to moving forward as a football club.
You say we're relying on Aubameyang, but we're also going to come on to that in a bit,
yeah,
because there are some worries there. But the thing I found weird is that there are people who were talking about this summer as like the Arsenal rebuild. And to me, this summer was the opposite of a rebuild. Like, a rebuild to me is like shipping out older players who were on expensive contracts and building a team for the future. And we kind of did the opposite of that this summer.
Mm.
So we gave Aubameyang another big contract. I can kind of understand that. But we gave Willian this big contract, which I think was a terrible idea. And I think he's been bad so far, like really bad. We let Guendouzi and Torreira go out on loan. Yes, they're still our assets, so we can still get money for them next year. And
yeah,
if Arteta was truly not going to play either of them, I can understand it, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah.
In the same way that I can understand the Saliba thing. Like, the Saliba thing, it seems that he's had this kind of family tragedy. But I think that in that case, we should have just sent him back to Saint-Etienne early doors. Yeah. And if we didn't do that, I think it made sense to keep him at the club. Like, when we were talking about potentially loaning him to a championship club, I thought that's the worst of all worlds. Like, we don't know. Whereas this way, I could see him getting, you know, by the end of the season, I could see him getting some minutes, like, especially in cup competitions if we're still in them. So I think keeping him in the squad, keeping him with Arteta, letting him make bonds at the club and not really have too much pressure on him. Whereas if he went to, say, Brentford, and they decided they were going to play him, which they would have had to have said to us for us to let him go there, that would have been a lot more pressure. He'd have been expected to be an active participant in a race to make the Premier League. And if you are in a really fragile emotional state, which I think we all assume he must be, I don't see how that would have been good for him.
I mean, the Championship is one of the toughest leagues in football.
Yeah.
I mean, you're playing 46 games a season and you've got some of the hardest bastards playing up front week in, week out. I mean, if he played against Watford, for example, I mean, for Brentford, he could come up against Troy Deeney and Glenn Murray up top. Oof. What a devastating duo that is. Oof. But, I was quite disappointed to see him left out of the Europa League squad, I'm not going to lie. I thought that would have been a perfect way to acclimatise him. Especially, I think we're quite unfortunate with our cup draws, though, because I think if we didn't play Leicester in that first round of the Carling Cup, we were in the Carabao Cup, I think he would have played, and I think that might have, you know, at least got him a foothold into the squad, if you know what I mean, and being registered for Europa League. But the fact he isn't is, I've always found it disappointing, because Europa League, as much as I f***ing hate it, the group stages are one of the most exciting things, because you get to see all the youngsters play. And it would have been great to see him against Dundalk or Rapid Vienna, just to see how he does. And especially when you look at Fofana at Leicester, I didn't watch the whole game, but apparently he played pretty well. And he's 19, just from centre to end, same as Saliba. It is a bit disappointing he weren't registered. And I probably would have liked him to go on loan to St. Etienne again. But the fact is, at the minute, he's cost £30 million and he's not registered for Europa League, and he's not going to get Premier League minutes anytime soon. So it is quite worrying in that regard. But that was from a previous hierarchy, so I'm not going to dwell too much on it.
Well, on the plus side, there'll be another registration window in January, right? Which is what, 11 Premier League games away? And at that point, you could imagine, if we're still in the Europa League, which you have to assume we would be, you know, the FA Cup kind of kicking off. You can imagine at that point, he does get put in the squad if he is, I guess, in a position to play. And also, I kind of think on Saliba that a lot of the journalists don't really know what they're talking about, because there was all this talk where they were like, Arsenal really want to see an improvement from him, you know, like diving into tackles. And somebody put online that he was the only centre-back in Europe's top five leagues last season who didn't commit a foul when trying to make a tackle. And so I was like, that's an interesting... I mean, that to me does suggest absolute bullshit.
Yeah, I mean... I thought that was one of the best points about him, where he's always stayed on his feet. He looks quite mature for his age as a defender. The thing is, at the minute with Arsenal, I'm kind of just trusting whatever Arteta does at the minute. Like, there's no reason not to. I mean, given what he's done and we'll probably go into this more in depth later, but I feel like what he's done since he's joined is just been unbelievable, given that what he inherited, the COVID situation, the players we had at the club, and the club was a shambles, and we managed to win a cup and get in Europa League football. But the thing is with the window as well is, I know you really hate Willian, but I feel like we did need some sort of attacking depth out wide. Mm-hmm. And apparently he's on around just over $100,000 a week, I saw. Obviously not great, given that runs to he's about 35. But he can cover the left, he can cover the right. We tried to play him as a false nine against City. I don't know why.
That was so weird.
It didn't work.
Because they were there to be had. I don't think we were ever going to win that game, but early doors in that game, I guess we should talk about it a little bit, because we should be clear here that we're not doing, what's going on with Arsenal because they lost away to Man City.
I thought it was
kind of an okay performance. We had more shots against them than we had against West Ham and Sheffield United. I thought there were moments where you could clearly see what we're trying to do. I thought, as bad as Willian was, Saka, I thought, was sensational.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
He was so good. And I mean, But there were times early in that game where you saw opportunities for a through ball and Aubameyang maybe misplaced the pass or Willian just didn't make the run. And at that point, I was like, this is... I mean, somebody did say, look where João Cancelo's playing. Look where Willian's playing. This is like the galaxy brain derby.
I know,
and,
yeah.
And it really was.
It was so odd.
It was all over the shop. And I just kind of thought like, yeah, we get it. Like, wave of the future. Like, I just kind of was like, I don't care. Like that much.
The thing is watching it, and when you first see the first 10 minutes unfold, you're like, all right, this looks relatively normal. And then you start seeing Bernardo Silva at defensive midfield and Cancelo's number 10. And you're like, what the fuck is going on?
It was so weird. But you've got to look at it like five games in. Is it five? Yeah, five games in. We've gone away to City and we've gone away to Liverpool.
Yeah, they're the two hardest fixtures out of the way straight away. And we're on, what, 9 points?
Yeah, it's not too bad.
And the thing, I saw this mental stat yesterday that 20% of all of Arteta's games as Arsenal manager came against Liverpool, Man City so far in his career.
Jesus.
And given that he's got the highest win percentage, I think, at the minute of any Arsenal manager, I think he's done quite well given how tough it's been for him. But yeah, I'm perfectly happy to lose 1-0 against City away from him. It's not a big deal. I thought we dug in. I thought we played quite well. We created some chances. I mean, the Saka chance, if he was a bit mature, I reckon he would have put Edison on his arse before, like, faked him, put his arse and rolled it in. And then obviously the chance for Aubameyang, which was wrongly offside, was a big chance.
Yeah,
and
it was.
You'd back him to finish it most of the time, but it just didn't happen. And I can't remember us giving up many, like, glaring opportunities either.
Yeah, there were like two, right? There was the Foden one and there was the goal. Those were the ones I remember.
Yeah, and the thing with our chances is that Edison did really well for them, and you could say Leno did well for some of their chances as well. Like, sometimes you just got to give credit to the keeper because they were straight out straight away and closed down the space. Defensively, I thought we were pretty good again. That's the one thing about, since Arteta's come in, defensively we look so solid. I know it's probably due to the three at the back, but you can see that there's an actual structure in place. When we defend in transition, it's so much better. Compared to Unai Emery, whenever we lost the ball, you had Xhaka running in mud on the halfway line with all their forwards bombing towards poor David Luiz, who's going to have to either get a card or give away a penalty or concede a goal. Oh yeah, now we're smarter, we're conceding a lot more. I feel like we're fouling in the right places. Like, definitely a note from like Pep's playbook as well, the tactical fouling. And in transition, we always seem to have a midfielder at least before in the line before the centre halves, so at least there's like some fighting chance that we can stop this counter attack. Which I don't know whether it was last season or the season before where we conceded the most goals from a counter attack in the league.
It was insane. Like, I mean, like, that was just where we were like,
it just got torn apart.
That goal we conceded against West Ham earlier this season was happening in basically every game under Emery for about half a year. Like, but I think Partey should help in that. I mean, we're all assuming he's played in the deepest role, but maybe he won't be. And maybe it'll be Ceballos or something. But I kind of agree with you on all of this. And that's despite the fact that I also thought that Tierney and Bellerin both had pretty poor individual games.
Yeah.
Like, they got beaten a lot, but we were still kind of okay.
Yeah, the thing that I hate playing against Mahrez because
he's so good.
It's just because you know what he's going to do. It's Iron Robin all over again. You know exactly what he's going to do, but somehow you can't defend it.
Yeah,
and even the thing is with the difference between him and Robin. I'm not saying he's anywhere close to Robin, but Mahrez's right foot is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
so he can go down the line if you want. It's no water off his back. He'll do it. And Tierney just couldn't handle it. I don't know whether that was for lack of training. Obviously, he had that stupid self-isolation thing despite him testing negative constantly all week. But, you know, I thought you couldn't have asked for much more in that game given the talent we had. And Partey obviously only had 1.5 training sessions. Rob Holt, we had an injury in warm-up. Not saying he would have done any better, Rob Holding, but it's not great, is it? It kind of throws plans in the air. But, you know, I think it was respectable. I mean, I think that's like the first time we're not conceded three goals against Man City in a league for like 4 years, isn't it?
Something like that. But I mean, just to go back to the window then, like, I feel like we've covered that City game. Like, I guess that my attitude was, over the back half of the season, the defence improved a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we got Gabriel. And I think we were hamstrung in this window as well by signing, obviously, Cedric and Pablo Marie,
yeah,
like in January. Those were issues. And I think we bought Cedric assuming Maitland-Niles would go. And I'm really glad that Maitland-Niles has stayed, but we are now in a bit of a weird position and we couldn't shift our centre-backs. But anyway, like, we've got loads of guys leaving next summer, like loads of wages freed up then. I guess the problem was that this was a foreseeable issue. Like, over the back half of last season, we were not a creative side. We were really struggling to make chances. And I do think that actually the priority this summer should have been a creative midfielder, unless you were absolutely convinced that either a move to a four at the back was going to let Ozil come back in, which I don't think is the case, or that Smith Rowe and Saka are going to be like genuine superstars. And I mean, Smith Rowe, I'm reasonably optimistic about. Like, generally speaking, over the last few years, we've seen people come up from the Championship and creative talents have transitioned pretty well. Like, Buendia was still pretty creative in the Premier League. Obviously, Madison, Grealish, like, these guys, Jota, like, these guys were creative in the Championship. They're creative in the Premier League. As you said before, the Championship is now a really, really tough division. And over half a year there, Smith Rowe, who also, you know, Monaco wanted him because Paul Mitchell's in charge there, who was previously involved in recruitment at Leipzig.
Leipzig wanted to buy him. They wanted to loan to buy, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And I mean, you can see why, because he's really that hybrid 8-10 role is what Smith Rowe wants to be.
Yeah, like, they don't call him the Croydon KDB for nothing.
I mean, that's also because, like, he's one of those blondes who's almost ginger. But He's very mobile. Like in that half season at Huddersfield on loan, I think it was 2 dribbles a game, 2 shots a game, a bit over 2 chances created. If he came into the Premier League and put those numbers up, that would instantly improve us, because he's the modern mold of creative midfielder, right? He's extremely extremely mobile and he's hardworking. And I guess that if I imagine a 4-3-3, which ends up being Partey, Ceballos and Smith Rowe, and then Saka on the left, Aubameyang through the middle, and Pepe on the right, then I start thinking, okay, like, I can see this team being pretty good. But I also think I don't like a club as wealthy as Arsenal going into a season like this and saying, we're going to bank on a 19-year-old Saka, Smith Rowe, who's never played in the Premier League, and a 32-year-old Willian, giving us enough creativity to challenge for the top four. And my worry as well with some of these transfer moves is, as much as I really like Arteta and rate him, changing him from first team coach, from head coach to first team manager, is an indication that the club has faith in his ability beyond the coaching, beyond the team setup. And I worry, based on this window, that he might be one of those managers who's genuinely an amazing manager, but isn't that good at transfers. it happens.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with KDB, or not KDB, getting too carried away with Emil Smith Rowe. The thing with him is, like, obviously he's been injured the start of this season so far, and this has been a recurring theme for him throughout his whole career as a senior footballer. And can you rely on an injury-prone teenager to come into the first team and cause an impact straight away? I don't know if you can. So in that regard, he's come back from his injury at the right time in terms of Europa League. So obviously, I think he would definitely get minutes this week, I'm assuming. And the way I see it, I mean, Ozil was just out of the equation now. He's gone. I don't know why anyone's pining for him. He's done. He's finished. Like, there's no way back for him at all.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Obviously, you know me. I raved about Mesut Ozil for years, and I defended him for years. But people thinking that just because we put him back in the side that we're going to become some creative, like, juggernaut is just plain absurd, because we saw him come back and when Arteta first came in, he did pretty much nothing the entire time. And obviously there's more stuff behind the scenes, like he gets apparently an extra 100 grand a week in bonuses if he plays and stuff like that. So obviously it's the combination of the fact that, one, he isn't as good as he used to be, and two, we just want him off the books. But I think the way we address this creative issue is, it's going to have to be... It sounds awful relying on someone as young as Saka, given that he's not a natural, like, midfielder. He's not a natural centre midfielder. I don't think he's only started playing there since Arteta came in. Is that you're going to have to rely on a front three, hopefully, of Willian, Aubameyang and Pepe, and Saka in that 8/10 role, and then you'd have Kim and William constantly interchanging. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only way you're going to be able to do this, because otherwise you're relying on William, who hasn't played number 10 since he was at Angie match blah 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 blah. And Sacco's he's had one season. It is absurd, but I don't see how any other way we can transform into this 4-3-3/4-2-3-1, whatever we need to do to actually dominate games, create chances. And Aubameyang has to play through the middle as well, which obviously brings an issue because he's not exactly the one dropping deep. But I did read an article from Lewis Ambrose about, I think he played, when did he play it from? Was it when Pepe scored? He went through the middle.
Yeah, he went through the middle before both goals against Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Because he played the pass that led to Bellerin clipping it, right? To Saka.
Yeah. And his Lewis's article was, he said, like, that was him playing from the middle was one of our brightest spots this season, because the way we as soon as he went there, we looked far more deadly. The thing about Aubameyang is that, I know people say about, oh, he's a pace merchant, whatever. His main attribute is off the ball movement.
Yeah.
It's superb. Like, he was dragging defenders all over the place, and we wouldn't have scored them goals unless he was dragging the poor overlapping centre halves of Sheffield United, whatever roles they were in.
Mm.
And that's why I can understand Willian's deal sort of as well, because it's not great. I've never really rated him, if I'm being honest. Very inconsistent player throughout his whole career. Never managed, not really a goal machine at all. Not great assist numbers, really. Good at free kicks, but we've got about three players who are good at free kicks now. But he does pick up some sort of creative burden. And if we didn't get him, I don't know what we would have done, because there's no creativity at all. We'd have to play Reece Nelson more. And is that viable, really, when you want to challenge for a top four? I mean, this top four challenge is like probably the most important for a long time. Because if we get this top four now, you're looking at, one, we've got Champions League football to bring people in, and two, just the sheer amount of money that was going to come in because of it. And this summer was basically a very like early stage of a rebuild where we just needed some players to acclimatise and get over the line before we can go again next summer and spend big, I feel like. And I feel like we've done that okay. But if we fail to finish in top four now, we're going to be back to square one. Because realistically, in my head, the only teams that would feel failure to not finish in top four would be City, Liverpool and Chelsea. If they don't finish in top four, then that's been disastrous. But for any other side below that, it's an achievement to get in there, in my opinion.
I kind of hear what you're saying about Willian. I guess my issue is just that how much better is Partey than every other central midfield option on the market? You know, like I was more excited in a way about getting Ceballos back on loan. I think he was like a real key player to get in. But I mean, it just feels like we could have got a good central midfielder for 30 million. And then we could have got a creative player who was younger. Like, I mean, if we end up not getting Aouar next summer and we get somebody else on our list, like, for instance, Dominic Szoboszlai, who's been, you know, quite heavily linked, then you think, well, we could have actually done that this last summer. And he could have had a year like bedding into the team. So that's my issue, that there's always a missed opportunity whenever you sign somebody. It means you couldn't sign somebody else. I mean, I do agree with you. Like, I thought that the period where Aubameyang was through the middle against Sheffield, we looked dangerous, though he had no shots in that time. The period where he kind of came inside and played through the middle against City was where we looked dangerous, because Saka got way more space on the wing then.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any way around it that Aubameyang has been very bad so far this season. Very bad.
The longest he's gone without scoring a goal now for Arsenal.
Yeah, and I mean, it's... The thing is, like, this is what decline sometimes looks like. Like, decline might mean that Aubameyang is still just as good through the middle as he has been in the past. But last season, he was really good from wide. Like, people kind of act like, oh, well, he's playing wide. What do you expect? He was amazing from wide last season. He scored 22 goals. It might just be that now he can't do that. Because, yeah, so far this season, I think he's had 6 shots in 5 games, which is really worrying. And Lacazette, who's absolutely despised by our fan base, has 3 goals in 3 starts. I mean,
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like they were like fluky goals. Like Lacazette is still a good striker. I just get a little bit concerned. The problem is at the moment, I find it easier to see ways that this team is like an eighth or ninth place team than to see ways that this team is like a fourth place team or even a fifth. Like, it's quite difficult to see unless one of our youngsters like truly explodes. Like, if Saka truly explodes, and I mean explodes as in like, he doesn't need to become one of the best players in the league, but he needs to become like
consistent.
Yeah,
consistently good.
Yeah, he needs to be like a consistently, and he needs to be like a Champions League level starter, basically. If that doesn't happen, I just find it hard to see how we're going to do it. Like, I mean, I expect Pepe to be better this year. Like, Pepe, yes, we've talked again and again and again about how Pepe was overpriced, and he was overpriced. And I always say Pepe's crap. I don't think he's actually crap, but like, our argument that he was overpriced wasn't that he was rubbish. It was that he was like a 40 to 45 million pound player.
It's not his fault that we paid this much for him, is it?
Yeah, and if this season he plays like a 45 million pound player, he'll be a lot better than he was last year, because last year he paid like a 15 million pound player.
Yeah, I feel with Pepe, same with Aubameyang as well, is that the sooner we manage this transition, as soon as we get rid of this three at the back, I think you'll see far more improvement for him. Because the thing with Pepe is he's not a winger who's supposed to be out. He's more of an inside forward. The problem you have with him and Aubameyang on left and right is that they both want to be in the middle. Mm. With Pepe, when you look at his goals for Lille, they were almost always from the right driving into the left, into the middle channels. Every single one. None of them were like he was getting chalk in his boots on the touchline like he's having to do now, because we're so heavily reliant on the left-hand side for attacks. Which is why I think if we move from this three at the back, I know it's going to be like the new excuse for Arsenal. Like, all we need to do is move from three at the back and we'll be great.
Yeah, it was like, play Aubameyang through the middle and Arsenal will be amazing.
It's hard to explain without anyone watching Pepe, but I do actually really rate him. And he just needs, you can see when he's had an even off day, because he just looks down. Like, he's a very confidence player. And when you saw it, when that goal against Sheffield United, that was everything that you expect to see from him on a weekly basis, because the attributes he has, is like in the final third, is superb. Like, his turn of pace is excellent. His close control is great when he's at full speed. And his finishing's also great. But the only way this can happen is if we have a creator filling the burden of what he's currently doing on the right-hand side.
Mm.
The proportion of our attacks that come down the left-hand side at the minute is it's not sustainable. Like, it's ridiculous. I know it's because we've got Aubameyang there, but we've got our three best creative outlets on the left. So you've got Saka and Tierney and all on the left. And then you've got Bellerin on the right, who's, I think, done a really good job since coming back from injury.
Yeah, me too.
Under Arteta, and at progressing play. And he's like chipped balls to whoever's playing right centre mid to start the attacks, as seen in Liverpool game and against Fulham, where we scored the exact same goal twice. The more balanced our formation is, I think the sooner you'll see the likes of Pepe shine more, especially from if he's able to be like start his starting position is more central, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There were like the way that Saka was picking up the ball between the lines against City, if Pepe can do that on the other side, then that's quite a dangerous situation for teams to be in, because he is so fast. He's one of the better dribblers in the Premier League. And when he comes into that inside channel, he'll score. So I suppose if the aim with Willian is that Willian will be a sort of, will maybe play like nominally as a 10, but what that means is like when Saka drops into the midfield, he goes to the left. When Pepe comes inside, he goes to the right. You know, like we saw, like an example of this would be like when Suarez went to Barcelona. Like when Suarez went to Barcelona, the theory was Neymar, Suarez, Messi, they're all playing in their preferred positions. This is going to be amazing from the start. And actually, it took about 3 months for Enrique to figure out how he was going to have that system work, which was basically that when one of those guys came inside, Suarez went out to the wing. And that was obviously with much higher talent level than Arsenal have.
Yeah.
But it just shows that even with that outstanding talent level, figuring out how to stop good players being in each other's space is still quite a difficult job.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen Griezmann ever since he signed for Barcelona, how much he's struggled. The only way I can see this 4-3-3, 4-2-3 working is if Saka and Willian are playing together. I don't know what that means for any other player in the side if their place is cemented, but that's the only way I can see it. And I feel like the benefit of Partey is that when you watch him play, he's not just like a defensive monster, is he? Like, he's great on the ball. And that combination of like a two-way player in games we're going to dominate means that we can just sit him next to Ceballos. We don't have to play Granit Xhaka every week like we've been having to do for the last 4 years. And then if that frees up another role for a more attacking player in midfield, such as if you give Saka an advanced role, or you gamble with Willian in at 10. Who knows? It might work. But as long as them two, I feel like, have to play together. Otherwise, we've got zero chance creatively this season. Hopefully, in the next week, you'll see us against Vienna start playing a 4-3-3. Hopefully against Leicester as well. I think we can take Leicester on a 4-3-3 as well. Cause especially since Soyuncu's out for 3 months now, apparently. Vardy's a doubt. And then you've got United away, I think, the week after, which will be a big test for Arteta, I think, yeah. Because everyone knows about United's struggles this season. Everyone knows Ollie's struggles this season. And it's constant them getting out of trouble with one result at the minute, or like one performance. And I feel like if we completely dominate them, like we did when Arteta first played them at the Emirates, we won 2-0, I think, but we absolutely, the game was over within 20 minutes. We absolutely dominated them. The thing is, I feel like the goodwill of the fans, since when Arteta's come in, the goodwill of the fans has been so high that our expectations have slightly got higher than where they should be. So the disappointment of this performance against Man City is way higher than it should be as well. Like, I'm not, as a level-headed fan who knows how good City are, despite their poor form this season, I'm perfectly fine with a 1-0 defeat at the Etihad. Whereas some people might think we should be going at them non-stop for 90 minutes because they're there for taking. It's like, we can't do that.
Yeah. It depends how you get that 1-0 defeat, right? But like, yeah, we showed enough in that game that I'm not embarrassed.
Yeah, that's the main... We've been losing by like 5 goals in the last 5 years consistently against... We haven't beaten the top six or any of the top six away for what? 60 games?
Yeah, something insane.
And I don't know where, like, I think it's very foolish for anyone to question Arteta's long-term future. I mean, of course, we talk about the mistakes he's made. He makes loads of mistakes. His subs aren't great.
Oh my God. His subs against City, where we ended up playing 3 centre-forwards across the front line. I was like,
that was a proper Arsene Wenger move, that. That was a proper Arsene Wenger.
No, but at least with Arsene, somebody said this the other day as well, where they were like, the best thing about... when Arsenal were losing under Arsene was just seeing who would end up playing right back. because it would always be like Ramsey is now playing right back, but also as an attacking midfielder, which was super fun. But I mean, like, Thomas Partey has actually played as a right back. Like,
right back against us in the Europa League.
Yeah, and it's the same way that when we need a goal, like, you sometimes see Granit Xhaka is now like basically playing left back. Like, I'm fine with that. Like, but yeah, it frustrates me when it's like, let's just chuck on some strikers. I mean, I do think, provided he comes back fit and everything, we're not going to see him for a while, but I really do think that Martinelli will fit nicely into this team. Like, he's that the game where Arsenal beat Leeds in the FA Cup, I thought was a really interesting game for Martinelli, because Arsenal got dominated in the first half and then were dominant in the second half. And to me, most of the difference was Martinelli. And that was against a team who we think is going to be, you know, like a decent Premier League side. And he works incredibly hard. He can put defenders on their arse. He's obviously a goal threat. And this is the thing with Arsenal. You know, there just haven't been enough people to make teams worried. It's just been like, well, you know, let's just keep Aubameyang quiet and then we're okay. And you saw City trying to do that. And as a result, it made space for Saka. And if Saka continues his progression, then you think, okay, then suddenly they've got something to think about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like Martinelli was just a low-key huge loss for us. I feel like it's kind of good for us because we know how good he is. But I feel like other people just haven't realised how special he is, genuinely.
Yeah.
Like, I've just considering what he was in, what, the third tier of Brazil 2 years ago?
I think it was the fourth.
And his impact was, I've never seen a player with as much impact as that for a long time at Arsenal, especially a youngster his age. Him and Saka are two of the best things that's happened to the club in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Especially given, imagine how much it would cost to have someone who can do what they do, like in the market now. And that's not even including their age, just what they do now without their future, like, potential.
Oh, I think Martinelli, like, I'm loath to say, like, to compare him to Saka because they're really different players. And I think if you ask me, I'd say Saka is probably more talented and probably more intelligent, like, just because of the different roles he's played.
Yeah.
But I think that Martinelli might be, like, a special player. Like, I mean,
he's got the star power. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, like, in the Europa League last season, he was just out of this world. Like, he was unplayable. And I was saying this the other day. You know, the players we've seen really shine in the Europa League group stages. I mean, he was better in the group stages than Greenwood. And to be honest, I'd happily, like, say he's at least as good as Greenwood. And, like, Hudson-Odoi, who I think is quite a special talent too. So, I mean, like, for him, if he comes in and he's, like, at that level, then I think that'll be a real boon to Arsenal over the second half of the season. I mean, the last thing I really want to talk about is Arteta, because it's weird. I'm very positive about Arteta with reservations.
I think that's natural, though, given that this is his first job. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, like, but at the same time, like, yes, it is his first job. That's true. But look, I would have ideally liked to have seen more of an improvement. I think there was an improvement in the results. And to his credit, Arteta said, these results, like, mask a little bit, like, the distance between us and the big clubs. Like, yes, we've beaten Liverpool. Yes, we've beaten City. We're nowhere near their level. And it's going to be a while till we are. So I like that. It shows that he's, like, a bit more dispassionate and objective in assessing the game. That's really good. On the other hand, I feel like his style of play at the moment is incredibly slow and boring because he's trying to teach us a certain way of playing. And we're taking like 8 shots a game right now, which is very bad. And the hope is that you plug in a few other pieces of talent, you switch some people around, and suddenly you start to see that rise. It's not like a pressing system, you know, where you see like if Hasenhüttl had come into Arsenal at the time that like, or Tuchel at the time that Arteta did, I think that Arsenal will be taking a lot more shots now and probably have a much better attack. The problem is that it probably wouldn't have solved their defence necessarily.
Yeah.
So Arteta, it seems, was like, I'm going to solve the defence as far as I can. I'm going to teach the team how I want to play and different patterns. And then the last thing we add is kind of a bit of attacking flair and, you know, we figure out how players fit together in attack. But it does mean that at the moment, if you ask me, are Arsenal better than Brighton right now? Are Arsenal better than West Ham right now? I would not be confident that we are. I'd be okay taking a bet that we'll be better than them by like Christmas.
Yeah.
But like Brighton right now are a better team than Arsenal, and so are West Ham, I think. Well, in fact, West Ham did outplay us at the Emirates, and that is a little bit troubling because I suppose you would like to see a little bit more by this point.
It's so hard. Like this, the last 12 months in football have been really odd. I feel like, despite the like, that's quite a 12. He's been in a job. What is it? December last year.
Yeah.
So that's creeping up on 12 months, but it's definitely not been anywhere near that by any stretch of the imagination, really, has it?
No.
So he had no pre-season coming in. He actually got COVID, which was the whole reason the Premier League shut down, to our benefit, obviously. And there was no pre-season really at all, apart from a few games against Brentford and Fulham, I think we played. And given that his style of, like, his vision of playing football is so systematic, it must be really hard to try and implement that in such a weird set of circumstances, such a weird amount of time. Like, you can see defensive, I think I would be more concerned if we weren't so solid defensively, because at the minute, like in that game against Chelsea in the cup final, I feel like we could have played an extra 45 minutes and we still wouldn't have conceded the goal.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I'd ever thought that as an Arsenal fan, in terms of defence.
Oh yeah, well, like the Chelsea fans in like the FD group chat were like, "Oh, I can't believe this. We're getting robbed here." And it's like you had your last shot on target in the 10th minute. Like, yeah, like it was never a danger.
As soon as Pulisic was off, I knew that was it.
Yeah,
like they're not going to be a big threat going forward. And I thought we pulled our game plan off well, but then that counteracts to the fact that we can't play it like that for 90 minutes every week, especially against smaller teams, and rely on some magic going forward every week. It just doesn't work. We haven't got that. If we had Mesut Ozil from 2014, we could probably do that because you know he'd come up with a moment of magic at any given minute. But we have no creative ability in that regard whatsoever now. And the big test for him from now until January is getting that attacking side workout. Because if we manage to get rid of this three at the back from the fifth time of asking, it might signal a big change for us in terms of taking shots, although it might come at a cost at a defensive end. I think Arsene was talking about the other week and saying like the balance isn't quite right yet. And to be more attacking, you need to take some away from the defensive solidity. It's only natural. It's such an easy thing to say, but we just need to be more dominant and more confident in our abilities going forward. And the more we dominate the ball, the more chances we're going to naturally create. And if we start playing Saka week in, week out in an 8/10 with Willian out wide, with Pepe and Aubameyang, I feel like there's enough talent there to at least get us through a really rough period of matches, even if we're not creating as much as we should. But Arteta's still got a lot to prove, obviously.
He talked about Arsenal pressing, and we still don't really press very much or very well.
Yeah. That's what Martinelli was outstanding with. I saw like a graph. It was like, you know, like top right Messi. It was like top right Martinelli with like pressures and tackles because he was just clear of everyone else in the league for a forward. And I feel like it's so hard to explain what difficulty is what Arteta's got, but he's still got a lot to prove. He knows he's got a lot. The thing is, he's not thinking the job's done at all, which is a great sign. There's clear evidence that he knows what he's doing in terms of defensive work was outstanding. It's not as if like, I mean, you know me, I'm not exactly Lampard's biggest fan. Sure. But if you chose, I think it's a clear choice. You choose to be your manager if you had the two.
Yeah,
and given. We just need to see what Arteta's plans are in an attacking sense because I don't think we've actually seen that yet at all.
No, neither do I.
So once we start seeing that, if we see the patterns, because we've scored real goals now, like the way we play at the back and the goals we score are like almost formulaic. They're pretty regimented. Like we've scored the same goal like 10 times. It's just... It's at a weird place at the minute with Arsenal. It's at a very weird place because the league at the minute isn't great. Everton and Aston Villa are challenging for the title at the minute. And then you're going to... Just because Everton are doing well, you've got people thinking, oh, we should have got Carlo Ancelotti and stuff like that. And at the minute, he can't really win. I feel like Arteta. Because obviously Kroenke have spent big as well. He confirmed that Kroenke have helped invest to get Partey. And I do generally think if our brother wasn't asking for £10 million agent fees, we probably could have got both. But obviously he wouldn't have fixed creative issues because he's not exactly a creative player, is he, really? No. It's really tough to like see how this side pushes forward because we can't do this forever and we've got no creative players that are worth playing. At a minute.
Well, I think hopefully maybe if the struggles do persist, even with a change of formation, maybe then we do see someone like Smith Rowe come in and him just like say, right, well, we might as well try this. Because if at a certain point it looks like the chances of top four are gone, then you might as well play the young players and get them kind of bedded into the side.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, I mean, this is kind of the last thing I wanted to ask you about, a prediction for the rest of the season. Because my prediction, I don't think we'll finish in the top four. I think... if you made me bet, I'd probably guess like sixth or seventh. But yeah. I think we've got a very good shot of winning the Europa League.
Yeah, we are. The way we set up is definitely like cup team at the minute.
Yeah.
Like for one-legged ties, especially, it's perfect. If that, I don't know if that's continuing Europa League this year. I'm assuming so. It's one-legged. But we'll see how that progresses. My prediction at the start of the season, I said about fifth. I think fifth would be fair. Mm-hmm. But after seeing us play, if I didn't take the other league into context, I'd say about fifth, sixth or seventh. But now looking at the league, I'm thinking, wow, everyone is rubbish. Who knows what's going to happen? Like, as I said, the only teams that would be a failure for not getting into the top four, Liverpool, City and Chelsea, in my opinion. Like, they're the only bona fide failures if they don't get it.
Yeah. But I think they all will. Like, I mean, as bad as Chelsea have been, and as bad as I think, well, not bad, but as underwhelming as I think Lampard is, they've just got enough talent that they're just going to find something that works.
You'd assume so.
Yeah.
The thing with Arteta is it's going to sound like the same every 6 months. Every 6 months is going to be a big 6 months Arteta, because it generally is. Like, you need to show progress in every stage of the season. And I don't know, it's such a weird place. I feel like I've been waffling on but not saying anything.
Well, it's difficult, man. Like, because
it's hard.
We're just kind of assuming that it's one of those things where you've got to kind of sell someone a story that you're like, look, better centre backs mean a more stable defence, which means you can have a more adventurous midfield, which means the ball's getting into the forwards more.
Yeah.
And so people are like, how do you fix the attack? And you're like, well, you buy a new centre back, you know, it's one of those things where it's like a little bit difficult. But I also think, you know, we might see some transfer movement in January, and fortunately next summer we haven't agreed sell on deals for Guendouzi and Torreira, so either they can come back and like try and convince Arteta, or we can sell them for decent fees. And you know, Luiz is off the books, Mustafi's off the books, we'll probably sell Lacazette. Like, there's
Ozil's
a lot
off the books.
Ozil. Yeah, so there's like 500 to 600 grand off the books right there, which I think will help Arsenal a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think given how giddy everyone was at the end of last season, like I was absolutely buzzing off we won the FA Cup. I don't know about you, but I was like, right, Arteta could be my dad. but I feel like we need to temper them expectations a bit as Arsenal fans. I feel like, you know, this isn't an overnight change. Like, with everything that's gone on, we've made some significant progress since the Emery era, even though he is top of the league in the Liga, by the way, somehow.
Jesus.
Cadiz are fourth, put that in the context. It is kind of a poison chalice of Arsenal, because it's been so long since we were like genuinely like really good that every manager that comes in from now until we win a league title is going to be like, right, well, how it's been a year, why aren't we competing? And it's like, it doesn't work like that, does it? One, you're relying on your own team progressing, and then you're relying on City and Liverpool to fall off, which is like, it's looking possible this season. It's rarely going to happen. And I say the first year of Arteta has been very good signs. It's just about how we elevate to the next level. And I feel like if we perform well this season, not necessarily get Champions League, but if we show signs of progress, that would be a very good step as well. I really want us to finish above Man United really badly.
Yeah,
I would love Chelsea to finish outside the top four, and I'd love us to finish up above Spurs. I'm not really asked about anything else, if I'm being totally honest.
That's quite a lot to want.
Yeah.
Because then that probably means we get top four.
Yeah, well, you never know.
You
never know what's going to happen in this beautiful game of football. But I mean, I feel like anyone who doesn't back Arteta at the minute is very silly. You have to. There's no reason not to at the minute. I mean, if these performances continue for the next year and a half, then you go, all right, well, Jesus, this has been grim, because it's been fucking boring for ages now.
Yeah.
But you just got to, not to be like a Joel Embiid, but you've got to trust the process. And you know, hopefully it'll go better than what the 76ers have ever done in the last few years. But yeah, I mean, Look, Arteta, his first job, he's had a haphazard squad, to put it lightly. There's been so many flaws in our squad. He's tried to fix some of them, not been able to fix all of them. And we've made some decent, I think is personally a decent window. Hopefully Guendouzi comes back and isn't an arsehole, but that's asking probably too much. Torreira come back after a decent season. He hasn't got an option to buy, so hopefully we can sell him for the same money we got for him in another big window next year when football's finances are hopefully a bit more back in order to get the final pieces of the puzzle. But the most crucial thing is that Arteta shows us his attacking vision, because without that, we're not going to go anywhere. Is my ending statement, because that is so crucial. Like we can't play like this every week.
God, agreed. I don't think I could watch this every week. But but at the moment, I'm like watching it kind of like the way I imagine like TIFO watch football, where I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. Like there's some interesting stuff. Yeah. There are some interesting ideas out there. But like the fan part of me is like, Jesus Christ.
My fan part of me is like shouting at Pepe just to run with the ball.
I know.
Like I'm not asked if he loses it, just run.
I was just shouting so much, and also at refs, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's the par for the course, isn't it? After this weekend's absolute joke of football.
Well, thank you very much, George. I feel like we've covered everything there.
I feel like we talked a lot but said nothing, which is
sure.
The perfect thing of Arsenal season so far. I would equate it to with Arteta gesticulating on a touchline about every 2 seconds. But you know, we're still doing the same thing.
Yeah, like that Emery thing. You know, with like the blackboard in the background.
Yeah, but you. The main difference between Emery and Arteta at the minute is that I actually like Arteta. So, you know.
I think there are a lot of differences.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely a lot of different things. A lot of different things. Also, I wanted to brush up on Arteta's man management as well, because I generally think it's been quite good, but I've seen people say it's not been great.
I have no way of knowing. Like, I mean, I have no idea, like, what went on with Ozil. I had no idea what... Because Ozil started for ages until the lockdown. Like, I have no idea what went on with Guendouzi. Like, no idea.
Yeah, the thing with Ozil, I saw people say, you know, that tweet about China, and I'm not going to go into it, obviously.
Oh, sure.
But he started every game off that tweet until lockdown. So, obviously, it wasn't that. And the thing with Emery, I think, to be fair to Unai, which is a rare statement for me to say.
Jesus, where's this going?
His biggest problem was Ozil. Because as soon as he lost the game without Ozil on the side, he brought him back straight away. And that just completely undermined you as a manager. And Arteta hasn't done that. He had enough of Guendouzi's antics in Dubai and wherever else and said, right, you're off. And who knows, maybe he needed that loan to sort of, you know,
grow up. Realise he's not the shit necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully they all come back. We have a good window, and then who knows?
Title winners 2022. Yeah.
Title winners 2022, and then Champions League winners 2023.
Easy.
You know? It's a piece of piss, mate. I can't believe Eddie was getting paid all these big bucks to do this.
Good one. Well, is there anything that you'd like people to go and check out after this quite lengthy episode of Arsenal discussion?
Yeah. After listening to 50-odd minutes of this, I don't think you want to listen to anything else for a while, to be honest, because I've just been waffling nonstop. But if you're on Snapchat, look at FD Snapchat, because we put, like, when you talk style stories every day, it's either, at the minute, it's Zach, Joe, or Sam presenting every day for you. So, yeah, new stories every day on there.
Oh, treats for your eyes. If you're listening to this as a podcast... through Overcast, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, then please go and subscribe to Football Daily Podcast on YouTube as well. It helps us out. If you are a YouTube watcher, then please subscribe to the channel, give us a like, and maybe consider subscribing as an audio podcast as well. Thanks very much for watching. Thank you, George, for joining me, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.